This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon. The governor has proposed a list of women who he wants included in an investigation of sexual harassment in New Jersey politics.
If the objective here is to find a better place in this state, and if it's a true whole of government approach and a whole of society approach outside of government, count us in, and I think we'll be measured by actions here and not words.
And we're halfway through the governor's first term. It's a good time to look ahead and see what's in store for New Jersey and the region. What issues matter to you most? Call us with your questions for Governor Murphy at 844-677-9283. That's 844-677-9283. WBGO and WHYY's Statehouse reporter Joe Hernandez will also be taking your questions via social media using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And now I'm joined in the studios of WBGO in Newark by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Nancy. It's good to be back.
I'm glad to have you here. So it's been a crazy and scary week with the news. There was the assassination of the Iranian general and last night's missile strike against American bases in Iraq. The news today feels a little less dire, but you're a former diplomat and a father of three young men. How are you feeling about this? What started to feel like a march towards war?
Yeah, and the father of a young woman, too. I mean, amen. Very treacherous times. I agree with you that tonight, as compared to 24 hours ago, I feel a little bit better. And as a former U.S. ambassador to Germany, and Germany historically had the largest non-energy trading relationship with Iran. So in the Obama administration, when the sanctions were being put in place and then enforced, that was a big part of my job. And I also spent an enormous amount of time with our military. Germany is the largest non-combat posting of our military in the world. So General Soleimani's name was known to me and to everybody who was in that mix. And let there be no doubt about this guy. He had blood on his hands of American servicemen and women to the tune of hundreds, if not thousands, and certainly thousands injured, particularly in roadside bombs that he oversaw the making of and planting of in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. Having said that, so there's no sympathy for this guy. Let's begin with that. That's black and white. But you have to have a context. You've got to have a strategic sense of where you're going. What's the next 5 or 10 moves on the chessboard? And I just hope that both sides, particularly our side, which we can control, we obviously can't control their side. I just hope that that strategic context exists, and that there is a deliberateness, that there is a, you know, what is this? Forget about all the casualties he had caused. What are the consequences for our men and women in military going forward, for our diplomats, for our interests around the world? So let's keep our military members in our prayers, and let's hope that there's a strategic context, that our interests are able to be propelled, but in a way where cooler heads prevail on both sides.
So let's stay with national politics for just a moment. You took over chairmanship of the National Democratic, Democratic Governors Association.
Yeah, almost gave me a new promotion there.
Yeah. And the primary job is raising money for campaigns in 2020, but you're also working on redistricting and voting rights. So tell us what you're hoping to do at the national level.
Well, it's a one-year term. I was the vice chair and chair-elect last year. This year, the chair of the Democratic Governors Association. Incredibly honored by that. We have 24 Democratic governors. 3 years ago, we had 15. And so beginning in our cycle, that began to turn. There are 11 states up this year and 2 territories. It's a challenging map, but it's an intriguing one with opportunities not just to hold what we've got, but to go out and try to take some one or two more onto our side. It's also in the context of a presidential election, 1/3 of the Senate, the entire House. It's a big year, Nance. Yeah. There's just no two ways about it. Big part of the job is, as you suggest, is to raise the money. I get my job number one is New Jersey. So the good news is, as it relates to raising money, most of that I can do from here on the telephone or people who may be coming to see me. but to put that to good use. And I think governors, you can make a strong argument that governors have never mattered more. I'm just working on a speech for tomorrow night. Every town in America, Moms Demand Action have invited me to give a keynote speech tomorrow night alongside Mayor Mike Bloomberg. And the big theme I'm hitting is governors have never mattered more. With all the inaction, with all the insanity in Washington, and thank God our party won the House back, so it's at least tempered it, the real action is getting done at the state level, and that includes a whole range of interests: healthcare, gun safety, public education, the environment, on and on and on. And that's the sort of themes that we're going to be pursuing.
And is 2020 also a particularly important year in terms of redistricting and then, you know, how governors and legislators, legislatures in each state craft those maps? I mean,
you betcha. Both our state legislative districts and our congressional districts. So the answer is absolutely. It's why we put a very significant amount of money into our budget to make sure that we've got a complete count commission to make sure everybody is counted. You saw the president and his commerce secretary now for 3 years have tried to write the rules of this so that they can limit the amount of folks who actually get counted so it works for them. We're pushing back on that hard. But 2020 is a hugely consequential year for all the reasons we've discussed in terms of the ballot box and the elections. But you're absolutely right. Every 10 years, we reset the boundaries, and a huge amount of consequence go with that. Never mind the simple consequence, how many members of the House of Representatives do you have at the federal level, but huge amounts of federal money get impacted by that. So in New Jersey, we got to make sure that we're fighting for every person to be counted and to make sure that we are present in order to get the support that we need to get and continue to get out of the federal government.
Cory Booker has been tweeting about the Electoral College and that it should be one person, one vote when we elect a president nationally. What do you think of that? I mean, does that have any hope of ever changing?
I don't know about the prospect for change, but when you look at the 2016 election, we'd have a different president when you've got a reality of Secretary Clinton won that by 3 or 4 million votes. The problem is they weren't in the right place. I've got a lot of buddies over the years who have been really passionate about that. I probably haven't spent as much time on it as probably I should have. I don't know about the prospects, but I do think it just my gut feel has always felt that it was a system for another time and another place.
Right.
That we've sort of moved on from that. And so I'd certainly at least welcome the fulsome debate. Again, we'd be in a markedly different place as a nation had it been in place for 3 years ago, now 4 years ago. We'd have a different president. So that's a big data point for me on the side of reconsidering the system.
Listeners, do you have a question for Governor Murphy? You can call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. We're going to be talking about the second half of his term and what his priorities are. And we're going to be talking about sexual harassment in New Jersey politics. Whatever you have a question about, give us a call. So let's, sticking with the Democratic Governors Association for a sec, the Star-Ledger came out with a report last week that said that you spent all or part of 93 days out of state last year. I knew you were going to want to have something to say about this.
Yeah, come on. I feel like I should have brought a spreadsheet here.
That includes everything from a business mission to India to family vacations. So is this unfair? I mean, you know.
Completely. Completely. Because the math was ridiculous. It included a bunch of days, for instance, where I landed in New Jersey at like 7:01 a.m., 6:53 a.m., took a shower, went to work, and worked 10 or 12 hours. The mission to India, I think we had 4 minutes to ourselves. We were pounding away morning, noon, and night. When I go to Washington, I don't go to Sightsee, the National Governors Association's meeting, for instance, coming up, or other days where I went into New York for a one meeting and you're being counted out. It's frankly, I thought it was ridiculous and profoundly unfair. Importantly, I want to make sure folks who are listening know what I said 5 or 10 minutes ago. Job number one is Jersey. I'm doing the Democratic Governors Association. My predecessor, Governor Christie, did the Republican Governors Association for his own interests. I'm doing the DGA for our interest, New Jersey's interest. A, to send our story out there if we think we've got a good story to tell. B, frankly, to rip good ideas off from other governors who we think are doing some things that we could be doing in New Jersey. We're much more likely to do that if we're with them and talking to them. And thirdly, whether it's States for Gun Safety, which I formed with Governor Cuomo, or reentering the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative collection of states, it allows us much more easily to form coalitions. And we've done that. And I want to do more of that, particularly given the inaction in Washington. So for all the above reasons, let's make sure when we're doing the math on this, let's do the new math, not the old math.
Okay, fair enough. We have a call from John from Pennington wants to ask you a question. John, you're on the air with the governor.
Hi, good evening, Governor Murphy. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure, John. How are you?
Great, great. There's been a lot of talk as recent as today about the New Jersey Chamber trip to Washington.
Yeah.
And the way that women have been harassed on that trip. I assume that you support this call for reform and to stop any such inappropriate behavior. But with that being said, Governor, why wouldn't you release women from their non-disclosure agreements so they can talk freely about any harassment they have experienced when they work for you and follow the reform of the chamber?
John, bless you for asking the question. So I'm going to give you the same answer on part B that not only I've been giving, but it has the added virtue of being the truth. The so-called non-disclosure agreements are common in political campaigns since the beginning of lawyers, if not the beginning of time. And they exist literally and explicitly and only to protect political information, what your strategy might be in this particular county or against this particular opponent. It's like the playbook for an NFL team. It is the purview of that team, and it should be. There has never, ever, ever been anything to prevent any employee working on our campaign, I'll speak for our own, I can't speak for others, ever, from coming forward and expressing any concern whatsoever about any workplace condition. Period. Full stop. It's never been otherwise from that. Anyone is welcome to come forward, and they always have been. And secondly, on the chamber piece, with all due respect, limiting hard alcohol on the train ain't going to get it done. This is a completely broader, more environmental point. This requires a paradigm shift. Both the League of Municipalities gathering, as well as the chamber train and trip associated with that, they've got to get to a different, meaningfully different place, not just a little tiny baby step, but a big incremental step. And I'm going to be very anxious to see, before either of those events take place, exactly what's put together, because we've gone to a different time and a different place.
Thanks for your call, John. Let me back up a moment because I'm not sure all of our listeners understand exactly what the issue is. So the Star-Ledger newspaper in Newark ran a story over the holidays that found 20 women who'd said they'd been sexually harassed or assaulted at state government events by state staffers.
Yes.
And one of the big offenders was this chamber train trip to Washington,
yep.
Which people start drinking at 9 in the morning on
yep.
the train and then spend the weekend in Washington at a conference.
Yep.
And the other was the League of Municipalities meeting in Atlantic City, another week, you know, conference where there are parties after
yep.
parties and people are in hotels. So you've just said, you know, stopping the alcohol isn't going to get it done. But so what?
Stopping one part of alcohol. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So what would you like to see happen?
First of all, I want to say again, for listeners who may not have seen that article, I was appalled by it. My partner in government, Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver, has sent Senator Weinberg a letter to that effect and suggesting a group of folks that we think would be strong participants in that in a commission or a committee that Senator Weinberg is setting up, and I give her credit for that. And I think as you had my voice at the beginning of the broadcast, as long as it's whole of government and whole of society, and this is action oriented, we are all in. And again, we've given a bunch of names, including the Lieutenant Governor herself, the First Lady, and others. Secondly, none of those 20 people in that article were in our administration. This is important. I want to make sure folks who were hearing this for the first time know that they were in other parts of government. And thirdly, I think it has to be wholesale, Nancy. We've made some pretty important wholesale changes in how the state is going to relate going forward to survivors of sexual assault and sexual abuse. They are wholesale and not incremental. I think it puts us at number one in the American class in terms of the environment for that. We've made significant changes to policies inside of government. So I don't think you can change, you miss the playoffs and you're going to change your left tackle. I don't think that's what we're talking about here. I think this has to be a wholesale, you know, what the elements of that, you know, I'm not sure, but it's got to be a meaningful change. I'm not sure if you eliminate receptions, maybe you figure out how the folks get to Washington, not in one train, but you get there by a certain hour of the day. But I think this has got to be a paradigm shift for both events.
So you mentioned Loretta Weinberg's, Senator Loretta Weinberg wants to start some hearings, a legislative committee to look at this. And you're proposing adding people to that committee, not just having it be the legislature, but having it be more like all state government.
Yep.
And you've
More than just state government. So this is also folks who are not in government that we've proposed. Union leaders. Community leaders,
the First Lady.
First Lady, as I mentioned, the Lieutenant Governor herself, several members in our administration, yes, but beyond that as well.
So this strikes me, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it strikes me as an attempt to depoliticize this issue a little bit, that there, you know, Senator Weinberg had a had an investigative committee and hearings about the Alvarez affair and the, you know, allegations of rape on your campaign. And that was, you know, it was pretty much, it was very focused on your administration and what you did wrong. And so I get the sense that this is more about, okay, but let's, these new charges aren't about your administration, but you don't want it to turn into that. Is that a reasonable read of it?
I'm not sure. I'll leave history to the historians and put that aside for a minute. I would just say this. This has to be, in the words I used, we're whole of government and whole of society. And those are the watchwords for me, and also action-oriented. And I don't think this is any time to, when you read that article in the Star-Ledger, the last thing we got to be doing right now is pointing fingers. Let's make sure we got everybody at the table. Every interest is represented, and let's focus explicitly on getting our state into a better place and getting this awful, tragic stuff in the rearview mirror.
Okay. And I mean, I think it's, I mean, the call that we had, and we've gotten a call pretty much every show on this issue.
It's a different voice on this particular one.
Yes. You know, but there is sort of some political peril there, because if there is a perception that this is a problem with your administration, as opposed to what I think everyone accepts, this is a problem with our culture and our society across the board.
Yeah.
I saw it as a move to try to broaden it and make sure that this doesn't turn into sort of like a political hit on you.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking that way, and I'm not thinking that way. But what I am thinking of is, let's not just look at one part of government. Let's not look at one part of our society. We have 9 million people who live in this state, and we're proud of that. Let's make sure all interests are considered. And if you're looking at just government, let's make sure all elements of government are represented. And if you're looking at the broader society, the great state of New Jersey, let's make sure we have as many perspectives. And you will see on the list of names we presented, you'll see, I'm proud to say, African-American women, Latina women, labor representatives, in addition to folks in government. So I'm less focused on the politics than I am. Let's make sure this is comprehensive and it's action-oriented and we get results that change meaningfully the culture in this state.
It seems to me that just getting more women in all of governmental roles
Named four new directors to the Economic Development Authority, all four of them women. We have a majority women cabinet.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Sorry, Governor. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in Newark with Governor Phil Murphy, and we're going to go to a call. We have Devorah from Passaic on the line with a question for the governor. Devorah?
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Devorah.
I wanted to know what measures the governor is planning to enact to combat the increased acts of anti-Semitism that are occurring with greater frequency in New Jersey and the entire area.
Yep.
I'll be honest, as an Orthodox Jew, I have never been more frightened for myself, my children, and my grandchildren than I am at this time.
Bless you, Devorah. As you can probably imagine, it is a huge topic for us, and the facts don't lie. I mentioned this at the outset, it was related to Iran, but I'm the former U.S. ambassador to the Federal Republic of Germany. In fact, I've lived in Germany twice as a private citizen and as a diplomat. And we, as you probably can imagine, have a deep history personally in the whole never forget Holocaust remembrance, fighting anti-Semitism. And this is something that's not new to us on either side of the Atlantic. The facts don't lie. The anti-Semitic actions and events are up dramatically in New Jersey. They're not just up dramatically in New Jersey, I have to add. They're up in America dramatically. I have to say we need leaders at the highest levels, whether it's in a state or at the federal government, to bear the great responsibility that comes with those positions to make sure that we, you know, the folks translate words into action. And my fear is we've had so much of us versus them that there's a permission slip that's essentially being given to folks who are on the fringes who may have latent instincts, in this case anti-Semitic, that are coming to the fore. We had the awful tragedy in Jersey City on December 10th. I think it was 9 days before I was here last with you, Nancy.
Yep.
Four innocent people, including a hero police detective, a mom of three, a young guy from Brooklyn, an Ecuadorian immigrant. Were murdered, and it's come out without any question that there was hatred on the part of the perpetrators that was directed explicitly toward law enforcement and the Jewish community. Now, I'm proud that last year I signed a bill that put a meaningful amount of more money into security. So in the here and now, Devorah, there is explicit law enforcement, homeland security, money, and efforts to protect institutions of faith, and certainly including temples, religious schools, community centers. We put grants out to folks could apply to harden their targets. My guess is we're going to see more of that. We are standing on high alert. We are incredibly vigilant, but the facts don't lie. I would also say this, there's the near term and there's the long term. And so we had a very good discussion last week with a lot of leaders in the Jewish community, many, not all, but many from the Orthodox communities, about what we need to do in education. You know, getting kids, just like never forgetting the Holocaust. You got to get kids in kindergarten through 12th grade and make sure that they understand the lessons of Holocaust. They understand what biases may exist in society, prejudices, understand the consequences of violating Martin Luther King's judgment of people based on the color of their skin and not the content of their character, or in this case, the religion that they worship or the clothes they wear or whatever it might be. We are the most, in many respects, the most diverse state in America. We wear that as a badge of honor. It's a source of enormous strength. It also gives us a huge extra responsibility.
Let me jump in. Some Jewish leaders in New York have criticized Governor Cuomo and officials there for not doing enough to protect Jewish communities, particularly Orthodox communities. One group of Orthodox lawmakers have asked the governor to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate and prosecute anti-Semitic hate crimes. Is that something that you would consider in New Jersey?
I'm not aware of all the New York side of the debate and discussion. I think we've got the best attorney general in America. And I know that he is personally all over this. So I don't personally see the need for that. I don't think that I think when anti-Semitic behavior is occurring, we are right now using the full thrust and power of our law enforcement and prosecutorial powers. I'd say two other things. One very sobering and one really cool. The sobering piece is we cannot ignore the responsibility of the social media providers here. I'm all for the First Amendment, but organizations like Rise Up Ocean County or similar ones in Rockland County, and look at the tragedy we saw in Muncie a couple of weeks ago. This is out of bounds. We have been pounding away on Facebook. We thought they were going to, they had taken down Rise Up Ocean County, and only a few hours later, the damn thing is back up. This is vile stuff, and we're not dealing with people's First Amendment rights. This is targeting individuals, targeting a community, and we will not rest. And I think we're going to need help from the feds on this, because this gets into the federal hate crime laws, and I think we need a much more 21st century, 2020s definition of the hate crime laws that include social media. The cool thing, Nancy, on January 1st, a week ago today, 92,000 Jews gathered at MetLife for the Siyum HaShas, which is the celebration of the 7.5-year journey to read each day one page of the Talmud, 2,711 pages and 2,711 days. And I was incredibly honored that New Jersey hosted that gathering from folks from around the world. And I think on that day, in that location, it might have been the safest place in the entire world. And our job is to make sure that that's the case in our state for our Jewish community, for all of our faith communities, not just one day, but every day.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phones. We have Margaret from Brooklyn with a question for you. Margaret?
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Governor. On the topic of religion, I would love for you to speak to your position on New Jersey's current attempt to repeal religious exemptions for vaccines. As you are, I'm sure, aware, we're not just talking the measles vaccine. Today's children receive approximately 70 shots in total during childhood, if you include flu shots. As you know, in your neighbor here in New York, 26,000 kids were systematically essentially tossed out of school with little time to kind of cram in a very accelerated vaccine schedule for which no studies actually prove safety. So could you speak to where you stand on that, as well as would you also seek to force Gardasil HPV vaccines on school children as New York City is currently trying to do?
Margaret, again, I'm not as well read into the New York City side of this. I want to say I'm honored that someone from Brooklyn would care enough about New Jersey to call in and ask me this. So thank you for that honor. There are lots of, we're right now, Margaret, if you're not in the normal, and you may well be, it sounds like you're extremely informed on this. But we're in the so-called lame duck cycle that comes to an end on Monday. And so in that process, unless we've made a decision and that said we're going to sign this bill or that bill, we don't comment on things that are in the baking process. And so I will just give you my general answer, Margaret, on this has been job number one for me has been and will continue to be the safety, security, and health of all 9 million folks in New Jersey, including especially our vulnerable communities, and even as if not more especially our kids. And their health and well-being is job number one. We make decisions. We always have. We always will be. We're Moneyball folks. We'll make the decisions on any bill, including this, based on science and facts and data. And that's where I'll leave it.
Well, let's stick with health for a moment. So a federal appeals court last month struck down a central provision in the Affordable Care Act,
yep,
ruling that the mandate that people have health insurance was unconstitutional. How's that ruling going to affect people's health insurance in New Jersey?
I don't know that I've got a precise answer for you, Nancy, but it's not a good development. You know, we've been battling the Trump administration literally from the moment we got into the office. People have asked me, I think you, in fact, asked me when we first met and started doing this, what's your biggest surprise? It continues to be the amount of energy that we and manpower and money that we have to put in to battling stuff coming at us out of Washington, to litigate, mitigate, compensate are the three words. none more so than in healthcare. So the Attorney General is continuing to lead, or at least be a part of, if not lead, in a whole range, 70, 80, 90 different legal actions against the administration. And healthcare is a big locus of that energy. It's a driving reason why we said, you know what, we're sick of being limited on the enrollment period. We're not getting our money's worth. We're going to establish our own state exchange, which will be ready for the 2021 cycle. It's why we passed both a mandate and a reinsurance law last year, I guess in 2018, in fact, that lowered premium for folks while providing and making sure they had the access. So it's not a good development, and frankly, it violates a core principle that we believe, and I think Americans believe, that healthcare is a right and not a privilege. I'm open-minded as to how we fulfill that right, as opposed to this particular tactic or that. But I do know the Affordable Care Act made a huge difference in covering people, particularly pre-existing conditions, allowing kids to stay on their parents' plans till the age of 26. Just a lot of vital elements to that, never mind folks who are employed as a result of it. My view is we're more than halfway up the mountain toward achieving that right. Why in God's name would we start to go backward? I don't get that, and it frustrates the heck out of me.
So it was Chris Christie's decision to go with the federal site instead of a state exchange.
Yep.
What will be the benefits? I mean, when will that start? And what will be the benefits of New Jersey doing its own exchange?
I'm not bashful about criticizing Governor Christie. On this one, I don't know that was a bad decision. He made that decision with a benign, supportive federal administration. And expanded Medicaid, which is sort of the catchphrase for that, seemed like a reasonable alternative at the time. Knowing now that Donald Trump was going to get elected president, and how they've dealt with the Affordable Care Act and how they've tried to dismantle it through legislation, and now thank God the Democrats won the House, so that's calmed down. But to your question, through the courts. I think having built an exchange from day one probably would have been a more prudent step. I'm not sure he could have foreseen that at the time. What does it allow us? Well, we send down 50-something million bucks a year to participate in the federal program. I'll give you two examples of what we'll be able to do that right now we can't do. There's a six-week enrollment period from November 1 to December 15th. That used to be a 12-week, three-month program. If we run our own exchange, we can write the terms of the enrollment period. Secondly, the Trump administration gutted the amount of money that goes into promoting that enrollment period. We now will be able to control the amount of money we choose to put into the promotion of that, and by the way, including in multiple languages. I signed a law a few weeks ago on driver's licenses that will there'll be a big campaign in beginning in June, and then it'll go live a year from this month. We'll do that in four languages. Similarly, we'll have that latitude to promote the exchange and promote the signing up period, enrollment period in New Jersey. Those are two. They sound simple. Those are game changers. In particular, the more people you get into the pool, the healthier the group is that you can get in on the margin to get in the pool, the lower the premium is for folks who participate in that.
And forgive me if you said it and I didn't register, but do we have a time frame of when it's going to start?
Yes, it'll be for the 2021 enrollment period. And so that will be, assuming we still stay on the same cycle, that'll be in the fall of 2020.
Okay. Let's go to Joe Hernandez, who's monitoring social questions. Joe, what do you have for us?
We got a question from Chris Adair in Hoboken. Chris says, ranked choice voting is being implemented in many places, including New York City. There's a bill languishing in the New Jersey Assembly that would bring ranked choice voting to the state. Do you support that?
Chris, I'm going to be honest with you, and Nancy now knows me well enough to know that I'm good for this. I honestly haven't spent 4 seconds thinking about it. And the bill, again, if it's a bill that's languishing or it's not yet on our desk, we wouldn't comment on it, even if I had spent 4 years thinking about it. I know the folks who support it feel strongly that it is a worthwhile pursuit. And I know other places have done it. I believe California's done it, to the best of my knowledge.
I think so. So
I'm open-minded, but I don't have a passion one way or the other.
Okay. So staying with health for a moment, today you had a roundtable on opioid addiction.
Yeah.
So how's that fight going?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you, and you and I, again, this is one you and I have talked about over the past couple of years. We announced today that for the first time in I don't know how many years, the amount of deaths associated with opioid overdoses decreased in 2019 relative to 2018. And for the many years before that, the increases were double-digit percentages. Also, we announced today that the amount of opioid prescriptions in 2019 decreased by 6% over 2018. So on the surface, we've broken the curve, and I'll come back to that in a second. I guess that's validation that what we're doing is working, but that's still 3,021 people who died. Every one of them a precious life. 3,021 families out there reeling still. So we're not going to rest, and we're not going to feel good about this until we can get that down to zero. And again, I'm glad the curve is bending the right way, but that's not enough. I do believe we have the right playbook. I don't think we've had it in place long enough. We inherited an approach that was very personality focused in terms of fighting television commercials and whatnot. We are much more of the money ball variety. We're convinced that we're not coming off as the smartest folks in the room by any means. We'll take any advice, but we want to be data driven. So there's four elements to our program. One is being obsessed with data. Two is to be much smarter about treating folks who have an addiction. Medication assisted treatment, or MAT, is a big part of that. Widely distributing Narcan is a big part of that. Third leg of the stool is the broader societal stuff that we know impacts addicts and recovering addicts, employment and housing, importantly among that. And fourthly, the hard-edged, nothing but the truth, law enforcement, trying to snap out these heroin mills. Fentanyl, Nance, as you and I have discussed, is the big, huge game changer here. Mm-hmm. The Attorney General said today that 80% of the heroin they test in their labs have fentanyl in it. China's been a huge source of that. So those are the four stools. I think it's the right playbook. We constantly reassess it. We put back-to-back $100 million in each of our first two budgets. We will put a big slug again into our budget that I'll announce in a number of weeks. And one last thing. We asked last year that opioid manufacturers and distributors pay a per pill fee to help us fund these programs. We didn't get that through. I bemoan that. I want to get that through. It's the right thing to do. They're part of the problem, part of the challenge. They need to be at the table as an economic justice matter to help us pay for this.
Okay, thank you. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy. I'm Nancy Solomon. What priorities would you like to see from the governor in the second half of his term? Give us a call at 844-677-9283. You can tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Ask Governor Murphy.
listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
We're back in Newark with Governor Phil Murphy, and we're taking your questions by phone or social media. Let's go to the phones. We have William from Orange with a question for the governor.
Good evening, Governor Murphy. Happy New Year. This is William. I'm an Orange Democratic District Leader. We've spoken before on TV and radio. Governor, happy holidays to you. My concerns are two things. In your recent budget, sir, you have froze some money for East Orange Hospital, the East Orange Train Station, and Montclair State. And also my other concerns are the open tracks we have along the Morris-Essex line, starting in Orange Train Station. Orange Train Station is not ADA, not accessible.
Yep.
And the maintenance along the tracks, there's plenty of garbage, debris, trees. Can we get that cleaned up sometime, sir, this year?
William, good to hear from your voice, by the way, and Happy New Year to you. On the second question, I'm going to have Diane Scicchetti, who's our commissioner of the Department of Transportation, who's the chairwoman of the New Jersey Transit Board, give you a call. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. It's yet another data point or example, however, that we inherited a colossal mess with NJ Transit. I take my hat off to the men and women, overwhelmingly union men and women, who were going to work there every single day in the last administration, doing their very best. But when you underfund NJ Transit by 90%, you put the wrong leadership in, you don't hire engineers for the trains, you don't adhere to federal safety standards, you get what we probably should have known we'd get. This is yet another data point, but I want to have Diane follow up with you. The money that you're referring to, these are investments that we like. So when I got the budget in June of last year, some of the lines I literally vetoed. These are expenditures that we like and we want to fund. But I also have to exert a fiscal responsibility to make sure that this state, again, fiscally, that was a mess that we inherited, that we get back on our feet. And I have to make sure that the revenues that we've projected are real, such that I feel comfortable making those investments. Now, there was $200-something million of these so-called frozen items. We've released a good chunk of them. Our results have been pretty decent. But we've, you're only now 6 months into the year. I want to make sure that we are, that we continue to be able to feel confident about the revenues. And assuming we do, I hope sooner than later we'll be able to release those monies. But again, I'm not doing it because I don't like the investment. Whether it's East Orange Hospital or Montclair State, these are institutions we believe in, and we believe in the investments. But I also can't play with funny money. I, the buck stops with me, and I got to make sure that our taxpayers around the state think, and believe that we are fiduciaries of their investments. God willing, we'll be able to make those investments. And I appreciate, William, your calling in and caring as you always have been. Thank you.
So William's calling from Orange. I have a question about Newark, right next door.
Where we are at this very moment.
Exactly. Newark and Jersey City are fighting a New York City program that gives homeless people in the city money to relocate for more affordable housing in New Jersey. We have a tape of Mayor de Blasio on the Brian Lehrer show talking about this.
We're talking about people who have struggled, and we're trying to get them not to end up in shelter a long time, but have some place that's an actual home. About a third of the time, that is a place in New York City. But we all know what's happening in the housing market in New York City. We simply can't find enough apartments, and it's wrong to keep people in shelter if there is an appropriate apartment.
But there have been problems with this program that I think the perception in Newark is that folks are sent to the city and then stranded after a year of assistance. And so I'm curious what you're thinking about this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, I uh, I enjoy good relations with all parties here. But New Jersey can't be viewed as sort of, gosh, we can't figure out what else to do with them, so we'll send them to Jersey with a limited lifeline. That's not right. And it's not like we've got cheap, you know, it's not like we're sitting in the a low-cost housing environment either. I'm sure Mayor de Blasio has got challenges with finding units and affordability. We're the densest state in America. We got just as many people in New Jersey as he's got in New York City. So I know this is now subject, I think, to litigation. And I'm not a party to that. So at one level, it's not, while it doesn't include us, I also would say I think we probably need to, if that's going to be the case, we need to let that play out. But, I mean, just sort of backing the truck up, that doesn't feel right to me. And I think Mayor Baraka, Mayor Fulop have every right to stand up and say, wait a minute, time out. We're not some lowest common denominator place that you're sending people. This has got to be anything related to housing, anything related to homelessness in particular, has got to be a consensual, all parties at the table. Let's figure this out together. And we've got our own challenges. America has their own challenges. I asked the governor of California recently what his number one issue is: homelessness. He has 25% of America's homeless in California alone. So it's not like this is a problem unique to New York City. We've got challenges in this respect. Let's solve these things together. Not I'm gonna unload my problem onto you.
Well, and solving them together, I think, speaks to my next question about this. I mean, we are in a region, and it's, you know, many of us live in New Jersey and work every day in New York. We're going across the state line every day.
Yep.
And, you know, we are in a region, and there is lower cost. It might not be cheap, but there's lower cost housing in New Jersey than there is in New York. So, but it seems to me the piece of this that's missing is the public policy piece about addressing the problem together, not just
jointly
shipping people and leaving them.
Yeah, I largely agree with that. It's why Governor Cuomo and I formed, and again, I've done a lot with Mayor de Blasio, and this is just to say that, but Governor Cuomo and I formed States for Gun Safety. You and I have talked about this. 80% of the guns that are used in gun crimes in New Jersey are illegally sent here from other states. So if we were an island unto ourselves, that would be one thing. We're not. We are a part of a region. It's why the greenhouse, the REGI states, greenhouse, regional greenhouse gas initiative states, easy for me to say, matters. Because the environment, okay, I'm glad we're ahead of the class. I was named the greenest governor in America today, by the way, which I'm very, by the League of Conservation Voters, I'm really proud of that. But boy, we need to be doing this stuff together. So yes, the answer is yes. Let's get around a table, accept that we are part of a broader challenge and broader region, and figure this stuff out together.
Maybe we need a beer summit between New York and Jersey, New Jersey City and Newark, and get people at the table to talk about this.
I am a Murphy, after all. I would strongly support that initiative.
Okay, we have another caller. Joe from South Brunswick is on the line.
Hey, hello, Governor.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good, thank you. You know, as you were just talking about, we're the densest state in the nation in homelessness, I was very disappointed to hear that you signed into law the ability to make getting a driver's license and legal documentation easier for illegal immigrants, which are also called undocumented immigrants, which, you know, is basically calling somebody who breaks into your house an uninvited guest. And I was wondering the rationale for that and when rewarding illegal behavior ever benefits society.
Joe, thanks for that question. I'll start as a premise that my guess is that you and I are going to see this differently, but I do owe you the rationale. So we have plus or minus 9 million residents in our state. And I have been a proponent of signing this law since, I think, before I was even a candidate for governor. The question is why. We weren't the first state to do this. And at one level, I wish we had been, but there's a big benefit to not having been the first state, and that is we can learn from the states that have done it. So there's this broad us versus them narrative in the country that begins with our president. And it goes like this. If I give you something, it's at my expense. And so that as it relates to driver's licenses, there's this view that we are somehow giving up some sovereignty, some amount of safety, some amount of, I don't know what, a value in displacing it to another part of our state, other part of our population. Well, guess what? When you look at the 13 or 14 states that have done it before us in the District of Columbia, two facts jump out that are common to all those states in the district. Safety on the roads has improved and insurance premiums have gone down. My job, number one, is the safety and security of the 9 million people who call this great state their home. So is giving someone the access to a driver's license who currently doesn't have it good for them when you hear the stories of how many hours and means of transportation it takes for them to get from home to a job or home to school or whatever it might be? Is it good for them? You bet it's good for them. Guess what? Joe, it's good for you and it's good for me because the roads are safer and you're going to pay over time lower insurance if our experience is anything like the other states that have done it. And that's not most states, that's all states. So if that means I can have a safer New Jersey and a more affordable New Jersey, I'll take, in addition to the values that I statement that I believe it makes, I'll take that every single time out.
Okay, thanks for that call. Listeners, if you have a question for the governor, the number is 844-677-9283, or you can tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And we've got another call, question that came in from social. Joe Hernandez, what do you have for us?
Yeah, this question is from Gene in Ridgewood. Gene says, what is your administration doing to make sure New Jersey residents will be able to get real ID before the summer? Is it possible to set up pop-up locations throughout the state to allow people to upgrade their current licenses?
So, Gene, good question. Real ID is a reality. We're in high season. I thought it was by October. I'm looking at my colleague, Dan Bryan. I actually thought the deadline was October. But, Gene, either way, I could give you an answer, or I could direct you to the horse's mouth and the expert, who was the commissioner of the Motor Vehicles Commission, Sue Fulton. And so I'm going to ask, as usual, our full cabinet and team are listening in tonight. And Joe, if you could somehow get the coordinates to our team, I'm going to get Sue Fulton to call, to contact Sue or one of her colleagues within the next 24 hours. We'll get to Jean and give her the facts. I like the pop-up idea. I'm not sure if it's feasible, but I like it. But I will say this. We will comply and we'll get there, and I'll leave it to Sue to go through how we're going to do that.
Okay, thanks for that, Joe. So I've mentioned before, we are at the halfway mark of your first term as governor, so it seems to be the appropriate time to ask what you're looking, what are your priorities going forward?
We are just about there. As I said, I'm going to give the State of the State address on Tuesday, which I think will give a little bit more meat in the bones, and one of the things I want to accomplish with that is to remind folks a little bit, not in great detail, what we've accomplished and where we're trying to get to. So I'm proud of lowest unemployment in the history of the state. I'm proud we're the number one public education system in America. I'm proud of the fact we're the first state in the history of America to offer arts education universally to our kids. Those are all really good things. I'm proud we're on a path to $15 an hour minimum wage, that we're funding women's health and Planned Parenthood. We put another slug in last week to make up for, again, a good example of making up for the Trump administration pulling money out. Earned sick leave, equal pay for equal work, funding public education, making health care more accessible, affordable, all of that. Incredibly proud of that. But we have a journey still ahead of us. We inherited a mess. And so, while I love the progress we've made over the past couple of years, we have a way still to go. And I think folks should expect more of the same. I'm not one just because we turned the calendar page into January or just because we're at the halfway mark of a term to all of a sudden wake up and say we're going to go in a different direction. I think folks should continue to see an obsession with the middle class and reinvesting in it and in the dreams of the folks who aspire, as I was growing up, one day to get into it. So that's education, fixing NJ Transit, healthcare, quality of life.
You haven't mentioned the millionaire's tax. You're shocking me.
Hold on. We got to find a way to pay for that. You just gave me a 70-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle of the plate. I can't justify making the same people who were ravaged in the last administration to foot the bill for this investment. I mentioned the opioid tax, pill tax on distributors and manufacturers. The wealthiest among us, we need them to pay their fair share. And I'm not a class warrior. I've got nothing against millionaires. I want more of them. But I want them to pay their fair share. And with that amount of money that we can raise, which, by the way, is about $500 million, put that right into the middle class. I'll give you a big chunk of that will go into direct middle-class property tax relief. We already do a lot of that. We got to do more. So finding sustainable revenues, particularly, Nancy, if we're at some point going to go through a recession, which we will. So an all-out investment in the middle class, the right way to pay for it, more of the same, changing the culture in Trenton is also on that list.
Okay, I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call. We have Michelle from South Orange. We only have a couple minutes, so please let's get right to your question, Michelle.
Okay, hi, Nancy. Hi, Governor Murphy.
Hi, Michelle.
I'm talking about the independent contractors bill, A5936 and S4204. I am a very happy independent contractor. I heard you're going to sign the bill. If you do, I will be out of work.
Yep.
What kind of protections will I have?
No, Michelle, I would take a breath on this. We've heard from a lot of folks who are in a similar position as yours. I don't comment on bills, as I mentioned, all the time that are not yet on my desk and we've made a decision on. So this is going to be in that category. We are obsessed with misclassification, but not directed at independent contractors like yourself. I'm obsessed with bad behavior, contractors who deliberately misclassify workers. Our administration has done an enormous amount. I want to do more. That is a main focus of ours, but I don't want collateral damage with folks like yourself.
Okay, thanks, Michelle, and thank you, Governor. We have to leave it there. You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. The show is produced by Doug Doyle with help from Eugene Son, Joe Hernandez, Alexandra Hill, Joe Capriglione, and our executive producer is Amy Niles. We also had help from Chris Tobin. Our engineer is Corey Goldberg. I'm Nancy Solomon. Thanks for listening. This is Ask Governor Murphy.